Hello, this is Michael Steed from Kaplan Financial, and in this podcast, I'd like to have a look at some tax issues for pensioners. So, tax for the senior citizen. Let's start with some personal allowances and some age-related allowances, just so that we're absolutely clear about how these work. The personal release, remember, are all now in the Income Tax Act 2007. And I suppose as a generality, we ought to start by reminding ourselves that all personal allowances are available, but they are based upon age. And they're deducted, of course, from total income and generally save tax at the taxpayer's higher rate of tax. But there are one or two oddities when your income goes over $100,000, and more of that in just a second. So what have we got? We've got, if you're under 65, of course, 6475 in the current tax year, and then it leaps with the age-related allowances. So if you hit 65 and you're 65 to 74, that rockets quite considerably, actually quite nicely, to 9490. And if you hit 75 or 75 and over, then that goes again slightly up, 9640. It's worth noting, I think, that women don't get these age allowances until they are 65, even if they get a state pension, lucky enough to get a state pension that kicks in at the age of 60. Right, so what do we need to know about the abatement of these allowances? And if you look carefully into the bowels of the Income Tax Act, it reminds us that both the personal allowance and the age-related allowances are reduced on this one-for-two gearing. And they both refer to this concept of adjusted net income. So what do we mean by adjusted net income? Well, you take your all-up income, you take off any allowable reliefs, and then, don't forget, and these are the ones that affect most people, and they're quite useful, you can take off the gross amount of any charitable donations and your pension contributions. So once you've taken those off, you get to this magic number, the adjusted net income. And then what you've got to do is to compare that adjusted net income to the, and I quote here because I'm looking at it, the relevant limit. Now, for personal allowances, of course, that relevant limit is 100,000. And for an age-related allowance, it's, in the current tax year, £22,900. Which we can sort of refer to more colloquially, perhaps, as the income limit for that year. Now, most of our software packages will actually compute this for us, including, of course, HMRC's own Chestnut, available free on their website. But I just want to be clear that we understand how these things actually work. And I think the point that I like to emphasise is that if you are a pensioner and you are, say, 65 plus, and therefore you're into the age-related allowances, the first limit that you're going to be looking at is the 22,900 income limit. Now, if you have income that doesn't exceed the 22,900, then clearly all of your age allowances are in place and they are not eroded. But when you go over the 22,900, then they start to be eroded on this £1 erosion for every £2 by which your, and there it is again, your adjusted net income is above the £22,900. So that's the basic shape of it. So pensioners ought to have, at the very least, the same personal allowance as somebody who is under 65, that is in the current tax year, £6,475. But since April 2010, when we've got the new rules on people who are earning over £100,000, remember that we get that abatement that kicks in again, and it affects not just people under 65, it also affects, and here's the point for this podcast, it affects people who are 65 plus. And that then starts to abate again. Now, we've already seen, and we referred to in the tax series, that it's possible to have a marginal rate of income tax at 60% where your adjusted net income is between 100,000 and about 113,000. And then it goes back to the background 40 before rising again to 50%. And I just want to make the point that that affects, that same rule affects pensioners. And we just need to get a grip of the fact that they will lose even the 6475 if they are particularly rich. So if you've got a very rich pensioner, somebody earning 100,000 plus a year, then they're going to lose both of their personal allowances and indeed their age allowance. Okay, now that's all I want to say about the age-related allowances here in the Income Tax Act 2007. I just want to spend a moment or two looking at the other allowance, which is age-related, and that is, of course, the married couples allowance. Now, in the current tax year, that's available for people who were born before the 6th of April 1935. So if you've got a married couple or indeed a civil partnership, if one of the parties was born before the 6th of April 1935, then they will be eligible for a married couples allowance. Remind yourself, if you would please, that the married couple allowance is different to the personal allowances and the age allowances because it's given as a tax reducer. So it comes off, if you like, the very bottom of the tax calculation. Whatever your tax liability is, it reduces it by the married couple's allowance. But it's only efficient at, and here's the bad news, at 10%. So if you've got somebody who is, say, 75 and over, then the main allowance is 6,965, and that sadly only gives a tax saving of 10% of that, and that's £696.50. So there you go, the married couples allowance is quite a useful piece of kit. Now, the rules changed actually in December 2005. And for those who were claiming the married couples allowance before that date, the 5th of December 2005, then the married couples allowance is normally given to the husband. And that's known colloquially as the old rule. Whereas if they married on or after the 5th of December 2005, then the married couple allowance goes automatically to the spouse or the civil partner who's got the higher income. And that's referred to as the new rule. And that's the point at which it gets a little bit more complicated, and I won't be able to cover every fine detail on a podcast here, but suffice to say that there are some rules by which, whether you're on the old rule or the new rule, one spouse or partner may claim one half of the specified minimum allowance as of right. And indeed, as we all know, and just to repeat the point, that if a party's tax bill is too low to use the married couple's allowance, then that person can notify Revenue and Customs that they wish to transfer the surplus to their spouse or partner. So there you go, a few thoughts on the married couple's allowance. I think most of us, we sort of get a bit lazy, don't we? We just enter it into the software package and it does it all for us. But when I look and I get a printout of the tax calculation, I always take time to look through it and just check it all off so I've understood the principle and the principles seem right in my head. And I think that's good practice. And it's also good because it enables us to explain the issues to our clients. And as we all know, the senior citizens do need a little bit of extra time and care just explaining these very complex rules, which sometimes they do rather struggle with. Okay, what I want to do now, folks, is to move on and have a quick look at pensions and other state benefits. Now, simple stuff, of course, but the state pension is paid gross. It is taxable. Most pensioners, or many pensioners, sadly, only have a state pension, and therefore, just as a matter of mechanics, it's not taxed at source, whereas the other sorts of pensions that people are likely to get and that we are likely to encounter as advisors, occupational or personal pensions, they are going to be taxed under the PAYE system. Okay, that's dead simple. I think one of the practicalities which never ceases to amaze me is just the torrent of tax coding notices which actually fall into people's hands. And, you know, for most normal people, it takes time to work through them. And even as advisors, I think we tend to lose the will to live after seeing, you know, at least a dozen of these things. And I have one pensioner this year who actually received 13 notices of coding. Deeply unlucky for that person. And it began to distress them after a while, and I had to sort of smooth them all down. Anyway, let's move on from that to state benefits. And this, I've had to scratch my head over a bit this year. I've got one of my clients whose spouse is sadly sort of falling away a bit mentally. And we've got a raft of benefits in for her and a home care package. And I've had to think deeply about which of these state benefits are taxable and which are not. So in this particular case, for example, the carer's allowance is taxable, but a disability living allowance is not taxable. And I spend a rather sort of useful hour on the various websites, directgov.uk, just being clear in my own mind so that I could advise this client properly as to which were taxable and which were not. Right, let's move on. Let's think about the dwelling house. I think on the tax series, we've often recognised that we will have pensioners who are, in effect, asset rich and cash poor. And during the course of our advice to them, we sometimes scratch our heads and think about the ways that we could sort of free up a little bit of income. Now, I've always had a sort of a healthy distrust, perhaps that's a bit too strong, but I've not been entirely happy about the equity release schemes. And before I go on to talk about those, which I will in just a second, I just want to make mention of the fact that the rent-a-room relief, of course, is a valuable relief because it allows people to rent out a room or rooms in their house and get that magic £4,250 a year, which is tax-free. The thing that we sometimes get asked about is, if I let a part of my house, what effect, if any, will that have on the CGT position if I sell it? Will I somehow put at risk my principal private residence relief? But I don't think we've got a problem generally. The letting of a part of the house is not going to give us a CGT problem unless the gain on the let part exceeds the gain on the exempt part, the bit that you're living in effect. And that's subject to that rather weird figure of £40,000. But the rules are in the TCGA 1992. And that's where you need to go if you need to get a better grip on that. Okay, let's have a look now at these equity release schemes. Now, there are a whole load of these available, and they make some quite grim reading, some of them. The idea of giving up your house for a bit of cash, you know, somehow sort of strikes at the property-owning democracy, but a lot of pensioners are in that position that they need to release money. And I've looked at two or three of these on behalf of my clients. And of these, it seems to me that very crudely, they fall into two boxes. The first of these are broadly what I would call the life annuity route, where you raise some money out of your house and that purchases a life annuity. And that loan is, of course, secured against the home itself. And I think they're broadly referred to as home income plans. But the other box are what I think are generically referred to, and I shall certainly refer to them, as home reversion schemes, under which you sell either all or a part of your house to a company, a reversion company, and they are going to pay you much less than the market value. And the numbers typically, or certainly on the number on the couple that I've looked at, are around about 50% of the market value of the house. So you can effectively get from the company 50% of the value of your house. And on that basis, they will allow you to live there for the rest of your life. Now, there are quite a lot of variants on that, but that effectively seems to me to be the two basics. And the thing that I think we ought to look for, not that we're able to do this, but that it's just a marker for me, as to whether the schemes are regulated by the FSA or the son of the FSA, as it will be shortly. So it's just one of those areas of care, and I have looked through two or three of these, and I suspect that some of you will have done so too. And I think it's a moment where it sort of focuses your thinking on your client's needs, where they need to raise that cash. Okay, so as we get to the end of this short podcast on tax for the senior citizen, I suppose making the most of the family home, we ought to consider things like actually gifting, trying to get the house into the hands of the next generation. But as we know, as accountants and tax advisors, that that is fraught with difficulty, and there are all sorts of anti-planning schemes, the gifts with reservation of benefits, the pre-owned asset regime, and these are all geared towards stopping people from giving the house away, the legal title, but retaining some kind of benefit, either directly or indirectly. We all know, of course, that the one way to get around the gift with reservation rules is to pay a market rent. And in some circumstances, that will make sense. Okay, I think that's pretty much all I wanted to say about that. Of course, when you die, you need to make sure that your wills are in place. And I think it's one of those kind of basic tick box things. And certainly I've got on my sort of tick boxes for all of my clients, certainly my elder ones. I do ask them about the provision on death. Now, in a later podcast, I'm going to be talking about various ways to try and keep the family home away from the local authority. But there are some changes in the wind on that, and I want to make sure that I'm on top of those before I do a podcast. So hopefully this short podcast has been of some use, and I look forward to talking to you soon. Cheerio.